You're listening to Fred and Xander. This is Chicago's home for sports.
Live stream ESPN 1000 or take a listen to our other shows on demand. It's the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
All right, Fred, we've got a rock poll this week. And this time, it's about collaborations.
Okay.
All right, so one artist meets another artist. They do something. Sometimes it's a couple people you don't expect to work together. And this was spurred on by a new release. And I was kind of wondering when some of these artists were going to show up with songs about the pandemic.
Okay.
And you got to hear this one. It's Mick Jagger and Dave Grohl. Now, Dave Grohl, like, works with everybody.
He does. And he also is putting out a new documentary about traveling in a van. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
Now, he's doing a whole thing about how groups traveled in their van, and the van was, like, one of the most important things, and how that's how they bonded together.
Well, the Nirvana van is still out there.
Yeah.
It's unrestored, and somebody bought it.
Yeah. So it's a
and
whole
the Aerosmith van
doing.
Was on Picker, American Pickers or something like that.
Yeah.
So it was Mick Jagger and Dave Grohl working together. Dave doesn't sing on this, but he's playing drums, playing guitar, multi-instrumentalist. But you can definitely tell what this song's about. It's entitled Easy Sleazy. Rolling Stones-ish.
Oh, my God,
I mean,
yes.
Just, yeah. And take Mick's voice out of it, just the way the song sounds.
Yeah.
And that
no
hook sticks in your head. Yeah, it's
like
been sticking in my head, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, they released that, and I think it's more of a novelty thing.
Yeah.
I don't even know if radio's playing it, but it's fun.
Right.
It's a fun song. It's a very, very funny, all the lyrics, if you hear the
whole
song.
Well, you were a radio programmer, radio guy.
Yeah.
When a song like that comes out, how much do you really need your guy to take a step forward and say, listen, we want to play this, that is new?
Well, if I were running a rock station today, I would play that.
Yeah.
I definitely would because, well, first of all, it's a no-brainer. You got Mick and Dave. I mean,
right. It's
not like people are wondering who these people are. And it's very timely.
Yeah.
It's got a sense of humor to it.
But the thing is, the people that listen, because, like, for me, I listen to classic rock, and I'll listen to, or on Sirius, I'll listen to classic vinyl or classic rewind songs from the 70s or the 80s. I would never hear this.
Yeah,
but
well,
one station,
you know,
I would say to any
classic rock programmers, including those in this city, if you have the Nards, you need to be playing that song. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, you should. No,
why
there's no doubt about it, because pop stations aren't going to play it.
Nope. No,
so, yeah.
It's okay to play something newer on a classic rock station when there's a connection.
Okay, well, that
too.
You might be one of the only guys that says that.
No, there are some. There are some adventurous program directors.
Because the funny thing is, like, on Sirius, on Classic Vinyl and Classic Rewind, they'll talk about something new that just came out.
Right, but they won't play.
No, then they'll play the song from 40 years ago.
Yeah, you really should. So, so that goes along with our poll. Here's what we're thinking on this poll. What is the best collaboration? Now, I know there's a lot more, but we can only list four. We've been over this.
Right,
so,
so
four that came to mind, and I'm Going Hungry is actually Hunger Strike from Temple of the Dog. Somebody said, oh, that's a band. Well, yeah, it is, but it's Eddie Vedder of Pearl Jam and Chris Cornell of Soundgarden really early on. Collab. So whatever.
So you want me to play them as we
why
go?
Why don't you play Temple of the Dog?
Okay, because that is funny. I saw these two guys in a picture, and I wondered why. Maybe that's why.
Yeah. Voices, and grunge, which, by the way, that whole grunge movement, that seems new to you.
No, what? No,
30 years ago.
But what I'm going to say is, how is this new? Chris Cornell died a year ago.
It's not new.
Oh, okay.
No, these are older. The only one that was new was Easy Street.
I got you. So this one has been out there for a while.
Yeah,
it sounds really good.
Early, 93.
And by the way, because we played a song that Eddie Vedder was part of, happy birthday to Danny Zetterman.
The biggest
Pearl Jam fan I know.
The 3 degrees of Danny Zetterman.
There we go. Yeah.
All right, so the next one we're going to play, this one I always got a kick out of. To a true Aerosmith fan, this might bug you, but this one I got a kick out of because we didn't expect it in the mid-80s.
No.
It's Aerosmith with Run DMC. So do you hate that? Did you hate that when that happened?
No, because that was done for a reason, because Aerosmith has kind of hit the skids a little bit.
Oh, I know why they did it.
And they needed a comeback. They needed people to like them again. And that video with Steven Tyler.
For sure you would have just been hitting the roof.
Yeah, no, I don't like that version as much as the original. Or actually, the original's not Aerosmith's either. Walk This Way is done by someone a blues guy back in the day. So, but the video, I just remember him taking the microphone stand and pounding it against the wall and breaking the wall down with Run DMC on the other side.
Back when MTV played.
Oh, it was huge. Yes. And they didn't do The Real World.
So here's a popular one.
This is my favorite.
Queen with David Bowie as guest. Everybody knows that one.
Love that one. You hear that all the time, too. Or I hear it all the time because listening to what
it's,
I listen
it's huge.
To.
It's been played on classic rock radio forever. And Stevie Nicks, I love Stevie, but she got around in the early 80s, quite literally and figuratively.
She did a great song. Speaking of Dave Grohl, she did a great song on Sound City.
Yes, she did.
On the Sound City soundtrack. She did a tremendous song.
Yeah, and so that was another thing that Grohl directed,
produced. It was very, very good.
All right, so this is... Stevie with the late Tom Petty.
Oof, that's tough.
On the rock poll, those are your options. Classic rock collaborations. Yeah, which one you liking? I know there's a lot more, but those four, that's what you have to choose. If you want to go ahead and let us know what your favorite out of those four are, or beyond those four.
Yeah, you can always send us messages on Twitter, me at Fred_Huebner.
Yeah, Xander Rocker, all one word, one R in the middle.
Yeah, so there's three of those are really good. And even though I'm a huge Aerosmith fan, that would be my third favorite out of those that we listen to. So, and the only reason the Eddie Vedder, Chris Cornell's not, is that it's the first time I've heard it. I've not.
Really?
I'm not, unlike Danny Zetterman, I'm not a Pearl Jam fan. So, yeah. I know he's a Chicago guy, Eddie Vedder and Bob Dylan are in the same.
Really?
Yeah, you know why? You know why I say that?
No.
Because you can't understand what the hell they're saying.
Look, they're not the only singers. I have a problem with Stevie Nicks.
I can name
some of the songs where it's like, what did she just say?
I hope Zetterman didn't fall down. He's probably doing his Sunday morning run, and he's just like aggravated right now.
You think he fell down because she said that?
He might have fallen down. I can't understand a word Eddie Vedder's saying half the time.
The fact that you've never heard that song is more surprising to me because that's been played a lot.
Yeah.
So,
well, I'm sure that I'm sure Danny will vote on the poll.
Yeah, if you want to weigh in, go
at
ahead.
ESPN 1000, yep. And you can always send us messages. Now, I mentioned that Carl Ravitch said something that I've been saying for years, and I've had disagreements on this radio station with everybody that talks baseball. Everybody that I have said for years that I don't think managers mean a whole heck of a lot in the game of baseball.
But to what degree? That's you have a sliding scale.
That much of a sliding scale. I don't think the Cubs won because of Joe Maddon. I don't think the Cubs lost because of Joe Maddon. I don't think the Cubs lost because
then
of Dusty
Baker. Why do you ever change managers?
I have no idea. Okay. I really don't.
All right, fair enough.
I think player managers will work fine in baseball.
When's the last one? Don Kessinger.
Don Kessinger was
one
of them.
Was one after that?
Yeah, I think.
In Chicago?
In Chicago, no.
No. I want to know. Last one in Chicago.
I think Don Kessinger might have been in 79 right before Tony La Russa.
Yep.
Right before Tony La Russa. Yeah. But he was here. But Carl Ravitch joined Cap and Jay Hood the other day talking about the importance of managers. Give it a listen.
The manager thing is so fascinating. As we all know, managers get fired one year. And by the way, 2 years before, they were manager of the year. So I think we all have to kind of wonder what the role, impact, import of a manager is. And look, you guys have all dealt with it. You're telling me that Joe Maddon sucked in his last year? If it was all broken in 2018, was that Joe Maddon and his responsibility?
Nope.
And what to what extent does he bear the responsibility? How important is Tony La Russa to a team that has the talent that team has? Could you or I do similar? And again, look at the manager's role is to get the most out of his players. What button does that mean they have to push? And does it mean they have to push any button to get the most out of those players? I've always looked at managers as bridge builders. How the hell do we get these guys to play the best? How do we put them in the right frame of mind? You're not teaching really anything. You're not coaching anything. You're not changing a swing per se. Eventually, their talent is going to be what dictates how good that team is. So I was surprised because he'd been out of the game. But whether it was Tony La Russa, Eduardo Perez, there's so many guys. I think the White Sox are just talented. They're going to win. You know, I don't think they get in the way very often, managers. That's a smokescreen for players who just are pissed off at the way they're playing and they don't like the guy or they want him out. I don't blame, nor do I give too much credit to the manager in these situations.
Ooh, that last phrase is exactly. I don't give them credit. I don't give them blame. Were the Yankees good because of Aaron Boone? Are the Yankees 5-9 right now with the worst record in the American League because of Aaron Boone? No, they're not. It's because their players aren't hitting. The Cubs won in 2016 because they hit and pitched. Joe Maddon had nothing to do with that.
Do you fire the team?
You can't.
You can't fire the players?
You hire managers to fire them. General managers get hired, and they know they're going to get fired. They're not going to be there forever.
Who is the longest tenured manager right now? I mean,
we can
look it up during the break, but...
Yeah.
Who would that be?
Jeez, there aren't many.
Is it Dave Roberts?
It might be,
yeah.
Which is... who's the Seattle guy? Scott Service? Is he a manager?
He just came in, I think.
Okay. Oakland's we know it's not Dusty. The Mets, no.
Dusty might have it for
a few years.
The most managed.
Yeah. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out when we come back. Jump on in if you agree or disagree vehemently with me, which, doesn't surprise me. 312-332-3776. We'll talk about it. Baseball, the White Sox with a doubleheader today. Not quite sure why Lucas Giolito's not going today. We'll discuss that more when we come back.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN1000. You're listening to Fred and Xander.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
So, we looked during the commercial break about the longest tenured managers in baseball. And Wikipedia has it all listed. And they have the longest current manager in the National League was Craig Counsell of the Milwaukee Brewers. May 4th of 2015.
Okay. He's had some success.
Yeah, there were a couple other guys. Dave Roberts of the Dodgers, also in 2015.
He definitely has.
And Don Mattingly of the Miami Marlins, 2015. Then you go to the American, or you go to the American League. I get confused every time I see the Brewers and other teams. You go to the American League, and I said Scott Servais, which is 2015. That's not bad. Kevin Cash of the Tampa Bay Rays, 2014. Terry Francona has been with Cleveland since October 6th of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
But the longest tenured manager in major leagues is Bob Melvin of the Oakland Athletics since 2011. So he's been there the longest. So he's been there 10 years.
So there's one thing you can say about all of these, that they've had some success, but it's not like any one of these teams have had some kind of winning dynasty.
Well, think about it. Joe Maddon had more success than any of those guys. Making the playoffs, what, five out of 6 years?
Well, this is my point. Now, I'm not going to ride the train with you that they don't matter at all.
Yeah.
I think there are subtleties, so they matter to some degree. However, what is the criteria here? Why are people staying longer in some places when they don't have an overly successful, you know, run?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, those are the questions we won't be able to answer, but it kind of plays into what you're saying.
Yeah.
What is the criteria? Why are some getting bounced after a year or two and others are sticking around, yet none of them are winning championships?
Consistently. Not yet. I think probably in some organizations, the general manager says, listen, I did what I can do. The manager did what he can do. The players just didn't perform. And he likes the relationship that the manager has with the players, because that's all it is relationship.
And that's where the subtleties matter, as far as I'm concerned. Dave Roberts, I don't know what's going to happen this year, but he could be, you know, he could be successful again.
Yeah, they're 13-2 or something like that. So they're
they're
off to a nice start.
They're a very good team.
Yeah.
They're a very good team. Obviously, he could have some lasting success. But the other ones, I mean, you know, hey, Francona, he is a, I don't know what his winning record is, but it's up there in like the top five.
They're always a team that's close. And, right. You know, he gets injuries, he has pitching problems, and he's been
sick last year
and stuff.
But sometimes you compare one situation to another, and you don't understand why in this situation the manager is made he's the problem.
Right.
It's got to go.
Yeah.
In other situations, it's not, but they don't win.
I think what Carl Ravage said is sometimes your star player, for some reason, one reason or another, just doesn't want to listen to the manager. And instead of, like you had mentioned, you can't get rid of the whole team, and everybody knows that one. You can't get rid of the 25 guys, now 26. You get rid of the manager, the one guy.
And another thing, how hands-on, are these managers?
Right.
You know, sometimes we get a glimpse, and I'm surprised that they're not more hands-on.
Uh-huh, sure. But see, because in baseball, I had asked the question of some guys, some players even, how important is the hitting coach? And he says, the hitting coach will find some things in my swing when I'm struggling, but hitting coaches a lot of times do not talk to a player. I had asked Greg Walker before, because I used to always say, hitting coaches don't matter, because you're a hitting coach. What are you going to do? You're going to help the guy hit? He got to the big leagues because he could hit, okay? You might be able to see something and adjust a little swing, hold his hands a little high. Now, my buddy teaches hitting, and he argues with me all the time, but he's teaching
well, that's
it.
His job.
He's teaching it to a younger group of people.
Right.
But when you're a major league hitting coach, it's tough to get guys to change what they do, and because that's how they got to the big leagues.
So
was learning
and
how to
I
hit.
Know where you're going with this, because then you're saying they're in the major leagues. Why do these managers have to be hands-on?
Well, yes, but see, pitching coaches mean something. And we see that with Ethan Katz, the new pitching coach for the White Sox, okay? He helped Lucas Giolito change his delivery, and Giolito listened to him.
Yes.
He's helped Carlos Rodon with the lower half of his body.
Now he's got to help Dylan.
Carlos Rodon's gone 14 innings and given up two hits, including a no-hitter.
And I'm sure he's working with Dylan.
But he is.
Right.
Yeah.
But, okay, on the other side of the coin, managers. You can kind of screw things up if you don't set the lineup correctly.
I don't know that you can screw things up with the lineup. A lot of people think you can. But I think you screw things up with the bullpen. And that's why I'm surprised, because I thought what Tony La Russa was doing with the bullpen was good, and now I'm starting to question it. And I'd love to talk to Tony La Russa about it someday. Me and Tony.
He has your number.
Yeah, just having a soda or something. Let's go to the South Side and Patrick. You're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Patrick.
There. Hey, I'm actually crazy about La Russa.
What don't you like?
Because it's bullpen management. Pardon the word, but it sucks. Like, every decision he's made in the bullpen has come back and haunted them. Like yesterday, he hit Ruiz in the walking knee in the guy and just blew the game open in the eighth inning. I don't know, maybe they need the pitching coach to manage the game in the eighth and ninth innings now for the White Sox, because he's, you know, every time he makes that move, it's always the wrong decision.
Well, you know, well, let me ask you a question, because here is my thing. I kind of liked a week ago how he was letting the bullpen guys go more than an inning. He did it with Kopech. He did it with Hoyer. Yesterday, Hoyer strikes out the side. Then he comes out in the next inning and has some problems. Do you think that he should go back to the way where a guy just goes, pitches the seventh, another guy pitches the eighth, another guy pitches the ninth?
I mean, yeah, because they got the people to do it. They got the people to do it. Don't just go for one formula and then stick with that. I mean, I just don't think they've lost about 7 games this year where bullpen decisions came into play.
Yeah.
7 games.
Yep.
And it's like it's getting a little old, you know what I'm saying? It's starting to get a little old.
Yep. Patrick, appreciate the call.
But what part of this is about the pitchers just performing to their potential? You know, that's a big part of it.
Yes, it is.
And I don't think that it should be one pitcher per inning. We're going to go through arms too quick, especially if we don't get a lot out of our starter.
Right.
But they have to pitch better. They're not at the top of their game.
Yeah. Well, see, and Len Casper said this once on the radio earlier this year, and he also said it again yesterday on TV on FS1. It was so nice to be able to watch Len Casper do the game on FS1, watching Len Casper and Eric Karros do the game from the White Sox and the Red Sox, with the Red Sox with those weird City Connect jerseys. They were yellow and blue.
You know, that was a reference to the marathon, the Boston Marathon.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of other teams are doing these City Connect jerseys. I know in the NBA, the Bulls do a
different... because Nike took over the contracts. So yeah, they're,
that
they've
was,
done it.
Right. It's a cool uniform, Art Deco, all of that, but it's just too weird seeing the Bulls out of red.
Yeah, I know.
Seems to me that they should stick with at least the colors.
Well, how about the Red Sox with blue and
yellow? No, I don't like it. I understand why they did that, and especially what happened in the history of the Boston Marathon, but no, it's weird.
Yeah. So, but Casper described it, and he mentioned how he had asked Tony La Russa. He goes, will there be some times, especially with the 3 batter minimum for relievers, that you will have maybe a starter go an extra at bat or an extra out in an inning before you bring the reliever in. So the reliever only has to face 2 guys instead of 3, because then if the inning ends, you can change relievers. He said, definitely. So I'm thinking maybe that's why he had Cody Hoyer go an inning and then start the next inning, as opposed to just going 1 inning, because then if you bring in Ruiz and he struggles, you can't.
In the past, this was never a situation.
No, until they came up with
this. It's a new wrinkle. It's a big wrinkle.
Yeah, it is. So they're trying to figure out what the best way is for it to work. Let's go to Morton Grove and John. John, what's happening?
Hey, John.
Hey, guys. I just called to say, I think you can get to the majors if, as a hitter, if you can kill all the guys who aren't major league material at AAA, college, whatever. And then you get to the majors, and now you're facing the best pitchers every day. Some who are on an upswing, some who are on a downswing. But, you know, it's disappointing me to see guys like Bryant or Javi that seem to have, you know, reached a peak and come down and not gone to the next level. And I think what makes you truly a major league hitting star is, you know, you have early success, you get challenged, they figure out what your weaknesses are, and then you overcome that and get back to being a top hitter.
Right. You're just adjusting
back and forth.
So, John, you're willing to make adjustments, right?
Absolutely.
I think that's the problem.
That's the biggest thing. I think when Chili Davis was here with the Cubs, he was only here for a year because I think some of the Cub players didn't want to take his instruction when they were struggling.
Exactly.
And then he was gone after a year. John, appreciate the call. There is one guy.
And that's where the tail's wagging the dog.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where the players are saying, listen, we don't like this guy. He's trying to get me to change what has been successful for me. And someone's got to show these players, it was successful for you, but look what you're doing now.
But look what, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're, like he said, it's adjustment. The pitchers adjust to you.
Yeah.
Then you have to adjust to the pitchers. Then they have to adjust to you. It's a game of adjustments back and forth.
But a lot of times in hitting, it's not necessarily adjusting your... I'm not a hitting coach. I only play when I'm on the radio. You're not adjusting your stance or anything else. You're just adjusting your approach.
Right.
And that's what they got to, you know, look for this ball. Be more patient.
Right.
Let the certain...
Those are the adjustments you have to make.
Javi, let the slider low and away go low and away and don't swing at it all the time. And that's taken a while to try to get him out of
it. I wonder if Chili told him that.
Well, I'm sure he did. I'm sure there's people on the radio that have called up and said that he should do that. 312-332-3776, talking some baseball, talking some hitting coaches. Talk a little bit about soccer at the top of the hour at 11 o'clock because the Chicago Fire had their first game along the lakefront last night, and I had a chance to be there. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. We're here till 11:30, and then Connor McKnight with the pregame show as the White Sox have two. That's right, a doubleheader against the Red Sox. So it's baseball all day. The White Sox, a doubleheader. The Cubs play on ESPN TV tonight. So lots of baseball. We're discussing it here on ESPN 1000.
This is Fred and Xander on ESPN 1000. Also available on demand on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
White Sox lineup is out, and that'll give White Sox fans something to get mad about.
The rotating left field rotisserie.
When is Adam Engel coming back? He had a setback the other day in his rehab. That's not
good.
How
far a setback?
I don't know. A couple weeks. So he may not be ready for till the next homestand, not this one. That's not good.
We need him.
Yeah. The White Sox do. Just jump on in. 312-332-3776. The 6-8 White Sox take on the Red Sox today. Here's the batting order. Tim Anderson is short, Adam Eaton in right, Moncada at third base hitting third, Abreu at first, Mercedes DH, and Grandal is catching, and Robert in center field. So that the first seven, pretty good. Normal, right?
Right.
Left field, Jake Lamb.
That's the rotisserie.
I'm looking here. He has never played a game in the outfield.
What?
At least I'm looking at his standard. He's played third base, first base, DH.
I thought he was.
No, never played a game in the outfield. From what I see here, I'm looking at Baseball Reference, unless I'm missing this.
Huh.
So this will be his first game in left field, and he's playing at Fenway. Kind of a smaller left field, but kind of difficult to play.
Yeah.
And Lurie Garcia at second base instead of Nick Madrigal.
Could you put Lurie
in left field?
And Madrigal? Play two games in a row?
He can play every game, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
Tell my sarcasm.
Yeah. Dallas Keuchel starts for the White Sox in the opener, a noon start. We've got the pregame here at 11:30. So a lot of people are just saying, okay. And I said the other day, there's no real reason for Jake Lamb to be there. If you bring in a guy and you needed a guy just because he's a left-handed hitter, find a right-hander that can hit lefties better. Just find somebody. I don't understand the Jake Lamb. He had just gotten cut. He's been with a couple teams over the last couple of years for a reason.
Didn't he have a decent season?
A while ago. Let me see here.
It might have been 16.
I got the stats up here.
Or 17.
He had like a 30 home run season, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. In 2017.
Okay.
Since then, 2018.
Who is he with at that point?
Arizona.
Okay.
He was with Arizona the following year, 56 games, 6-31. Then in 2019, he had 6 homers and 30, and he was only played 56 games and 78 games. Last year, in 2020, he was with Arizona and Oakland, and he played 31 games, had 3 homers and 10 RBIs, and hit 193.
How many games did he play with that 30 home run season?
149.
So that's a big drop-off.
Yeah, year before that, 151 with 29 homers, 91 RBIs.
But, big drop-off to 2018.
Something's happened to him since in the last couple of years.
Well, and even games played, right?
Yeah.
17-18? Yeah.
Yeah. So 17, he had 149. 18, he had 56. So, but yeah, And so he's playing left field today. Andrew Vaughn was very interesting, I thought, on the pregame yesterday with Jay Hood. He was doing the pregame leading into the first pitch at 3 o'clock yesterday, and they had cuts from Andrew Vaughn talking about playing left field at Fenway. And he said, it's a smaller left field. You don't have to work play too deep because if it goes over your head, you know it's going to hit the wall. And he said, we were out here taking balls off the wall and things like that. I'm sure Jake Lamb is doing that also. And I understand that Andrew Vaughn didn't play outfield until he came here. But
and he made a pretty nice catch.
Yeah, he's made a nice catch in two here and there. Jake Lamb's getting another chance. I'm starting to think that, at least for me, hope that that might be Jake Lamb's last chance as a White Sox player.
Hmm. Well, we're running out of people.
Whenever Adam Engel is ready.
Hey, if we can start combining people,
yeah, that'd be great.
The best possible.
That'd be wonderful. So that's the starting lineup for the White Sox in the doubleheader. Now, I mentioned earlier, and I don't know why I haven't been able to get back to it, but with the rainout Friday, the Sox could have pitched Dallas Keuchel and Lucas Giolito today. Carlos Rodon on Monday. That's what we thought the schedule was. But they chose to push Giolito and Rodon. Rodon threw 114 pitches in the no-hitter. They pushed him back an extra day of rest. The 27th man, a pitcher, will be activated Sunday for the split doubleheader. It could be a starter for the second game after Keuchel starts game one. Right-hander Jonathan Stever, who's on a 40-man roster, would be a candidate. Now, I don't know yet who that guy is. I don't know if the White Sox have announced who their starter is for the second game. But for some reason, that sounds to me like you're giving one up instead of just...
It's a bit curious.
Yeah.
Kind of sounds tactics.
Can't you go Giolito and Rodon? I mean, Rodon pitched Wednesday, so he's got Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's 4 days off. Right. He pitches on Monday. Now, granted, Monday is a 10 o'clock Chicago time start, 11 o'clock in Boston because of Patriots Day.
Mm-hmm.
So they're pushing him back. So
Monday
apparently
tomorrow.
Giolito is going to go Monday, right. And then they're going to push Rodon and go the next game when they take on Cleveland. So Rodon just no-hit Cleveland. You're going to have him face Cleveland again. I don't know. The right thing to do? Who knows? That's what they decided.
So many moving pieces. But it does seem like the Jake Lamb thing. And I know we're running out of resources, but it's the let's get everybody to play. Like the Little League thing. What you try to do is get everybody to play. And at some point, it's like, okay, maybe somebody should be there consistently.
Listen,
even
Ozzie Guillen used to do this every once in a while. He would have like a Sunday.
The Sunday lineup.
The
thing.
Sunday lineup. And it's like, okay. Don't go giving a game away. Give guys...
Well, at least don't say that.
Give guys a break. You know, don't start three new guys on a Sunday because you want to give people a rest.
Right.
Rest them throughout.
Stagger it.
Yeah.
Don't call it a thing, Sunday lineup.
I don't know. We're not managers. Again, we've discussed how much they mean or don't mean. They do put the lineup together. From what we understand, they put the lineup together. Or is it their computer that says, hey, Jake Lamb's got a chance to hit this Boston pitcher today?
I think Tony does.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm sure he gets help from other places. But, yeah, Jake Lamb, first time ever playing the outfield in the big leagues. And he gets that opportunity today as a 30-year-old.
We'll see how that turns out.
Yeah, so we'll see. 312-332-3776. Some of the other highlights in baseball yesterday, really quickly, for those who didn't know. And, again, I mentioned this yesterday. It's really nice to see. The New York Yankees have the worst record in the American League. So that's always encouraging.
Everybody outside of New York has a smile on their face about that.
And probably Mets fans, too. Because Mets
that's
fans
true, the other side. Yeah.
So Jacob DeGrom struck out 9 consecutive hitters, falling one short of Tom Seaver's major league record. He finished with 14 strikeouts in a 4-3 win over the Rockies yesterday. Rays beat the Yankees 6-3. Tyler Glass now 5 innings of 1-run ball. The Yankees have lost their 7th consecutive series to the Rays. Dropped to an American League worst 5-9, the latest in a season that they are at the bottom of the league since 1991. And it just makes every baseball fan smile if you're not a Yankee fan. Because you know what?
Especially in Boston.
Yeah, you know what? And I understand when non-Bulls fans, basketball fans are not Bulls fans, see people walking around with 6-time champions on their jackets or shirts, they kind of don't like it. I don't like seeing people walking around with Yankee stuff that says 27-time World Series champion.
No.
I don't enjoy that. That's just me. Call me crazy. Cardinals beat the Phillies yesterday 9-4. Yadi Molina hit 2 homers, doubled, and drove in 4. That's pretty impressive. Nationals went over the Diamondbacks. Brewers beat the Pirates yesterday. But the Cubs were the story yesterday because they actually hit the ball for a change. They've been hitting. They had the lowest average in baseball, 166, going into the game yesterday, and they pounded out 14
hits. What a difference a day makes.
And the question is, can they do it again tonight? Because they're going to.
I don't know if they're doing that every game, but at least you know shoot for some consistency.
Yeah.
Because it literally was an off on switch.
Yeah. You want to talk baseball? Jump in 312-332-3776. Also, we come back. We're going to mention the two teams that play at the United Center because they were both winners yesterday. And
nobody saw it.
No, and probably nobody saw it. 312-332-3776. Right, and we'll talk about them when we come back here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000. Now, back to more Fred and Xander on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
Before we look at the two residents of the United Center, who were both winners yesterday, we haven't talked about them. Vinny Duber from NBC Sports Chicago put out on Twitter this morning that Tony La Russa says the Sox will see how the bullpen is used behind Dallas Keuchel in Game 1 before deciding who starts Game 2. But Jonathan Stever is the White Sox 27th man. When you have a doubleheader, you can call an extra guy up and he can be on the bench there.
So he's there.
He's there in case they're going to use him as a starting pitcher. Right. So he could be used as a here's what you do. Dallas Keuchel go the distance. Go complete game.
Well, it's seven.
Yeah, but Giolito is not going to pitch today, so he's going to go tomorrow. He's on 4 days rest, so he could have pitched today. And Rodon will not go on Monday. He will be pushed into the Cleveland series, a short two-game series in Cleveland on Tuesday, Wednesday. So that's the way they've decided to do it. So, you know. Then we just have to wait and see. It's kind of important to win some games now. They're 6-8, and the Cubs are 6-8. The White Sox are 6-8. So it would be nice to, get on a little bit of a roll here.
You think?
Yeah. And Boston's hot. Boston's won 10 of their last 11. Yeah, they won 9 in a row before losing.
They were really pissed off getting beat by the Orioles.
Yeah.
Fenway.
Uh huh.
Three games to start off the season.
Yeah.
And one of them were it was like a 13-2.
Right.
Game.
Yeah.
Embarrassing.
So last night at the United Center, the Bulls win, and they are back to a tie for 10th. Now, you got to remember, in the NBA, the top 10 teams in each division make at least have a run for the playoffs because they have that play-in game or whatever it is. So the Bulls are now tied for 10th, a 106-96 win over Cleveland. Vucevic with 25 points. I'm listening here. Tyler, you know basketball better than both of us put together. The Bulls took 83 shots, 43 pointers. Is that about average? Almost half your shots, three pointers?
Half your shots is probably
high.
Quite close. It's close to, I mean, it's just the way that the league's going now.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's been like that for a few years, right?
Probably like 3-4 years now, yeah.
Well, because Cleveland took 88 shots and 30 of theirs were from three. And they actually shot they both shot 40% from three. Cleveland was 12 for 30. The Bulls were 16 for 40.
It's certainly on the higher end.
Yeah,
but
that's what I thought.
The higher end is now more of the mean,
yeah,
if you will.
Yeah. And Vucevic had three. Markkanen had three after scoring, having a bad night the other day. Lauri Markkanen had 16 yesterday. Valentine with 2 of 7. He's not shy. He is definitely not shy. He likes to put the ball up. He was 5
for
10. You
can't make it if you don't take the shot.
Exactly. And I think that's his MO. So Satoransky came off the bench and he had 7 points. But the Bulls win, and it was needed because they lost a few in a row, not playing well. They are now at Boston on Monday, at Cleveland on Wednesday before coming back. So they have 4 games this week in the next off today. And then they play 4 games in 6 days. And it's getting down to crunch time for them. The Blackhawks have an interesting schedule coming up. They win yesterday. Subban in goal shuts out the Red Wings.
Yep.
Okay? They get goals from Kane. They get goals from DeBrincat is 22nd. Kalinuk is 2nd. And Pew Suter is 12th, which has been a great thing to see.
Yeah, that Suter's been a very, very nice surprise. But, you know, that first game in Detroit,
yeah,
that really was.
It was 1-0.
Tough.
It was 1-0. Next thing you know, it was 2-1. They were losing, and it's like four. It's like, what's going on? And that was a rough game. And I know yesterday on the hockey show, and again, if you missed it, Stan Bowman was on with the guys, Pat Boyle and Brian Handley yesterday, and Jeremy Colliton said he didn't feel that bad about that game. And if you're a Blackhawk fan, losing to Detroit should make you always feel bad, especially this Detroit team. And we talked about it a week ago. The Blackhawks were going into a stretch of four games against Columbus and Detroit. And they had been 9-3.
Winnable
they
games.
Were 9-3 for the year against these guys. Yep. So this was a time for you to make up some ground. And they didn't do nearly what they should have done. So they get a 4-0 win yesterday. The power play the power play was 0-2, but the penalty killing was 6-6. So they had 6 penalties, 6 power plays for Detroit, and the Blackhawks
killed
them all.
It's a very old school Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, no success on the power play, but you know, they'll stop any penalty.
Right. So Subban yesterday, 29 shots, 29 saves. So that was good to see. The Blackhawks now, they better get used to playing Nashville because they play them not one, not two, but 3 games in a row this week. They play Monday at Nashville, Wednesday at the United Center, Friday at the United Center.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't done that great against Nashville, if I'm not mistaken.
No.
So it's going to be tough as they try to stay close, stay in that playoff race for the postseason. Not going to be simple. But the question is, are they happy? Are they fine with not making the playoffs? I mean, they're not winning anything, right?
No.
It's not. I mean, last year there were people that were upset that they made the playoffs and were kind of gifted the playoffs and then won the first round. It's like, well, this is just going to convince the management that maybe they don't need to do so much and things like that. And then they lose draft, you know, the draft status goes down a little bit. I think Blackhawk fans at this point would rather they not make the playoffs.
There's
enough young players that I think the Blackhawk fans like.
Yeah.
Like we said, Suter.
Yeah, there are solid building blocks for the future.
DeBrincat came back and had a really good year.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Kane's still there. Kane with his 15th last night. Vinny Hinostroza with not one, not two, but 3 assists last night.
Yeah, that was he was not used down in Florida.
Yeah.
Q like quit on him.
Yeah. So there you go. The kid from Bartlett has 3 assists last night in the Blackhawks 4-0 win. That's nice to see. So you know,
Subban gets a shutout, Lankinen gets a day off.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Yep.
They just should have won 2 up there.
Sure. Sure they should have. And it's been a whole lot of what if. This year for both the Bulls and the Blackhawks. The Bulls made the trade, and then they go out and lose a bunch in a row. And that wasn't what we were expecting.
Yeah, wasn't but in the plans.
The question is, what's it going to be like? What's it going to be like next year? What are they going to do? They've got rid of some of their guys. They got rid of Wendell Carter. They got rid of Hutchison. They moved on from Otto Porter. And now, are they going to move on from Markkanen? And what are they going to do with Coby White? He was 2-for-10 yesterday. Trying to take over the job as a point guard now after having that job and then not having the job and now trying to do it again.
Is there a big move off season for the Bulls, Tyler?
Probably not this off season. Well, they're going to try to get a point guard. I'd imagine this off season is whether it's Alonzo Ball or something of that nature. But the big off season is 2022. You see a bunch of these stars, they have either opt-outs or they have ways to become free agents, and that's when the Bulls can really make their move and become maybe not a championship contender, but you start to slot yourself into the conversation for a top 4 seed and become relevant in the NBA.
Huh. Is it true that they're just going to expand the roster so everybody, all the stars can play for the Brooklyn Nets? So they can have a roster like 20, and they can all just play whenever they want to since they take so many days off. I was driving in today, and they said that the top 3 players on Brooklyn probably won't all play together until the playoffs. So it's like, okay, well, what's the point of watching basketball if you're a fan of that team?
Well, you got to remember this, too. I mean, if they just drop them all in a playoff game, like, yeah, you're talented, but a lot of times, sometimes you see the better, quote-unquote, teams, the teams that are gelling well together. Like, that's what made those Warriors teams so dominant. They gelled together really well.
Yeah.
And then when you dropped Kevin Durant in on that team, remember with the Raptors were playing really well as a team that year. The Warriors, you started to see the friction come out. And KD came back in, I believe it was like game 6 of that series. And he started to play really well, and then he tore his Achilles or ruptured his Achilles in that game, and then you started to see things fall apart again.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not a big NBA fan. People that listen probably know that. I watched the Bulls. I did not watch last night's because I was at the Chicago Fire game, and we will talk a little bit about that when we come back. We're here until 11:30 leading you up to White Sox baseball, a twin bill. You catch it all right here on ESPN 1000.